didn't. Honest. I ran out of gas. I had a flat tire. I didn't have enough money for cab fare. My touch didn't come back from the cleaners. An old friend came in from out of town. Someone stole my car. There was an earthquake. A terrible flood. Locust. It wasn't my fault. I swear to God.
Okay, Ramblers. Let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the f*** are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the f*** is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Now's my shit together, is my shit together.
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim O. We got Matt Byrne on the board at Greg Papasan Studio. S&P futures up 21. NASDAQ futures up 144. As NVIDIA is having some kind of a conference today, so the stock's up $21. Because every time their chairman talks, it's like, would he be a great used car salesman, you think?
It's a cult. We're looking to get short for Stocks and Jocks this week.
Yeah. Greg has been putting together a website which kind of teaches people how to trade. Not necessarily how to trade, but if you are bullish or bearish, long-term, short-term,
get some ideas.
Yeah, list some option strategies that you could potentially use, then you can pick one or not pick one, but it's a kind of educational thing, but he also does some trades.
We'll have it up and yeah. Everyone can see it and call in and talk about it if you want.
And we're for a rare treat on Monday morning because of Dub Bears, and NCAAs. We have Mr. Kevin. Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. I've never been called a rare treat before.
Well, there you go.
How about a snack?
Yeah.
Snack. I've been called a treat sarcastically, I suppose. But
All the ladies, there must have been one that thought you were okay.
The best I'd usually do is that guy doesn't entirely suck.
Oh, there you go. Well, that's... Sometimes it's rare praise from some people. Just say
yeah, take it where you can get it.
Take it where you can get it. Well, I'm going to say that there's several records in sports that probably will never be broken. I'm going to say
DePaul's losing streak.
DePaul, well, how can you lose? Break that? They lost every game, or in the conference.
Right.
Yeah, you can't ever. You can tie it maybe, but you can't. I'm going to say maybe Joe DiMaggio.
They could expand the conference schedule so that you could lose even more games in a row.
That's right.
I think the odds of that are really low.
Actually,
DePaul hired a pretty good coach, though, in Holtman.
Well,
I'm excited.
In the immortal words of my buddy Tom Tracy, the late Tom Tracy, unfortunately, who went to a camp in the summer years and years ago, because Tom was a DePaul grad, probably 1971 or something. 70, then he ended up having to be in the Army. And drafted by the Celts, but by the time he got out of the Army, kind of lost his skills a little bit. Anyway, he went to this camp, and one guy's in there with a million X's and O's. Kevin, I'll tell you a story before the next guy comes in and goes, that crap doesn't matter. It's who are the X's and who are the O's. So there you go.
Exactly.
Or as the expression goes, it's not the X's and O's, it's the Jimmies and the Joes.
Yeah. It's anyway, but I'm going to say Tony Esposito's shutout probably will never be equaled. I'm going to say Joe DiMaggio's hitting streak, that kind of stuff. Probably never get another 300-game winner again. But the Bears using 25 years using 8 number one picks for quarterbacks. And that I think will be the record, but never having a good one is really, except for maybe the guy from Denver is probably pretty good.
Well, McMahon was good.
I'm talking was about, that, no, 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 is, I'm probably after McMahon.
Is that in the 25-year range?
No. I'm talking about a 99 on. Starting with Cade McNown.
Forgot about that name.
Can you rattle him off, Kevin?
Oh, we could go Cade McNown. They spent... They spent draft picks on Rick Meyer. They spent draft picks on Jay Cutler.
Oh, you forgot Grossman.
We didn't draft Cutler. Grossman got him to a Super Bowl, sort of.
I mean, I'm just saying that whatever it is, not that all these guys are terrible. They gave two to Denver for Cutler.
Yeah. And they never put an offensive line in front of him.
And they gave one for Rick Meyer, and he was gone in a while. Then there was Trubisky, Fields, and now whoever this new guy is going to be.
Yeah. So what did I tell you yesterday when we chatted? We're counting on blind squirrel theory here.
Oh yeah. Not a question is which one do you grab?
Do you remember when that the USC played Notre Dame?
Yeah, he was terrible.
He was 0-4 against ranked teams.
Yeah.
So,
I don't think he's as big as a huge red flag.
In his defense, USC's offensive line was god-awful as well. Because the year before when he won the Heisman, they actually had a good line. That was Lincoln Riley's first year as the head coach. And, and he inherited a pretty good line. But boy, they were terrible last year. A lot of teams, the Notre Dame game is the one that I saw, and he was under pressure the whole game. So I'm not going to judge him by that game. I thought the year before against Notre Dame he was really good, but is he going to be the guy they draft? Could they still trade down and get a Jaden Daniels and feel really good about that and fleece somebody in the process and get a whole bunch of picks? I don't know. I have no idea what they're thinking.
Well, one guy who's a true believer, and the thing of it is because of the fans, not individually, because Kevin, I guess we're all fans and hopefully we're not all idiots, collectively are so stupid. It's all about we got a new general manager, we get to start all over. It's the same ownership. It's like me managing people's
money.
There is
a common thread throughout those years of quarterback futility, isn't it?
Yeah. It'd be like if I had a money management firm, which I do, by the way, and all of a sudden, I was just horrendous for 3 years, and I go, ah, it's all right, we replaced Greg with this other guy. Okay, but it's your firm. I don't know. Greg was the problem. Okay, you got a new guy. There's a new guy, Joe. Okay, we'll roll with him for a while. Nobody would do that.
And it really speaks to hiring process for coaches, because how many coaches over those 25 years were good coaches? And the hiring process for general managers as well. How many general managers were good? Lovie Smith was a pretty good coach, and he was generally successful. They were usually a division contender, and he got them the one Super Bowl that they lost to the Colts and Peyton Manning. So he was a solid coach, not a great coach, but solid. Have they hired any other good coaches? Anybody else along the way where you say, boy, that guy was good?
I'm not so sure that they ever give the person the tools to be good.
Okay, so now let's go to the next step. How about general managers? How many general managers have you seen over that time? And if you look back and say, boy, that guy was good.
Benesi was probably the last one.
Benesi, and I'm not sure how good he was, because he really kind of rode the... I'm not saying he was bad, but he did kind of ride the Jim Fink's coattails, so...
Well, you mean...
Can we tip our caps to the Steelers?
Yeah, God, yeah.
Speaking of general management...
Well, they dumped their guy because he didn't want to compete.
They got two decent quarterbacks, not great, but decent quarterback, decent options, for what? $1.2 million and a conditional fourth-round pick.
Yeah.
Everybody else is short quarterbacks. We're talking about drafting three quarterbacks in the first, five picks. And the Steelers got two, with $1.2 million and a conditional pick.
Well, I remember.
Well, and let's also do note that the Steelers had a first round draft pick starting for them in Kenny Pickett, and they traded him, and what they got for him was not substantially different from the what the Bears got, in that all they really get to do is swap picks. So they traded Pickett and a fourth and got back a third.
Well, the story on that was, I don't know if you're reading this weekend, the story on that is that the coach, you know, the Steelers coach, I think, is a good coach. But he's also been allowed for many years to do his job, which, of course, in Chicago, we are going to change the coach, and everybody, you know, hope springs eternal with a new coach. Everything's good now. Well, we got a new guy. That guy, when they went and got Russell Wilson for, like, next to nothing, he originally, they said there was going to be a competition at the quarterback spot, and he was all for it. Well, evidently, he turned totally sour to pick a guy. He just wanted the job. And the coach said, basically, you're out of here. And he's out of there. I mean, coach said...
But he wanted a job, but he got traded into a backup situation.
Yeah, well, but I'm saying the coach said, I don't want to deal with the guy, and the general manager immediately got rid of him. There's a pecking order in Pittsburgh where the general manager does his job, the owner does his job, and the coach does his job. You'll never see that here. And that's essentially the reason why they've sucked pretty much the whole way.
Yeah. Now, we will see, although, you know, I think it was questionable keeping Eberflus, but okay, let's say that works out. We will see what happens with a new president running the team, because it's the first time an outsider has been hired to run the team since Jim Finks. So we'll see how that goes. He's been there, what, almost a year, but not quite a year?
Yep.
Kevin Warren. So, you know, I guess we'll see. And Warren's got a pretty good track record, both working for other teams as well as commissioner of the Big Ten. So, you know, we'll see how he does. I'm not sour on that. You know, clearly having the McCaskey family run it, it doesn't mean that they're a bunch of idiots, I suppose, but what it does mean is that by having it be the family in charge the whole time, you're very much limiting your talent pool when you're hiring.
Well, not only did they dump Pickett, they dumped Canada, too, the OC. They bagged him, and that was swift and... What's it called? They just said, you're done here. That's it. You and Pickett are gone.
Well, I just, whatever it happens to be, I went to look at CNBC last night on my phone. What pops up with some guy's article about how this Ryan Poles is a genius, because out of all the Bears general managers and all the number one picks, he's the first guy to actually put the team together first. And I'm sitting there going, what is he talking about? And saying even that this guy has much more to work with than Jim McMahon. And he rattles off who the halfbacks are and the two ends. And since the Bears just signed these two ends and they have a pretty good tight end, and they hired they've signed his halfback, that he's in much better shape than, say, Jim McMahon was. And I'm going, wait a minute. Whoa. The Bears had Walter Payton, Hall of Famer, and he might be a little bit of help. Could probably have been the best blocking halfback around ever, wasn't he? And then the same year they got McMahon, they also got Jimbo Colbert. Now, who would you rather have, Jimbo Colbert?
Were they the same year? Were they the same draft year?
Now, who would you rather have on your team as a quarterback, Jimbo Colbert or one of the ends the Bears just signed? They already had Keith Van Horn. I think they might already had Bortz and maybe Hilgenberg. Thayer came the next year, I believe. I'd much rather have an offensive line in place than – you can't throw at anybody if you're on your ass, basically.
As Jay Cutler learned.
Yeah, as Jay Cutler learned.
But I say Jay Cutler spent more time looking at the sky than he did downfield.
So there's two guys on this team that you'd rather have as a quarterback than Walter Payton and Jimbo Colbert. I don't know about that. Just saying.
Well, and I don't necessarily think it was that much genius anyway, because, and I'm not saying, I actually think Poles is assembling a pretty solid core to his team. But if we're going to call it genius, if he really were a genius, he would have been able to engineer enough really good players all at once to give a reasonable shot to Fields and see what he really had. As a result, they go into this, they finished up last season still not knowing exactly what they have in him. And I think a really, you know, if he really gets good coaching at Pittsburgh, he can be very successful. He's a talented guy, and he's not a dog. He works hard. I just really, you know, to me, what the Bears did really, really wrong with Fields is they kept trying to make him a pocket passer, which is fine because in the NFL you can't run the whole, you know, your whole time. You have to learn to be a pocket passer. But you don't say, I'm going to take you to almost exclusively a pocket passer when that's not who you are now and that's not what makes you successful. What you do is you use what makes him successful to build some confidence and build some success while you step-by-step convert him into a pocket passer or what, you know, the more classic NFL quarterback, and you do that. And this is true in any business, that if you're going to leverage you leverage the strengths of the people that you have. You don't work around what they aren't. You work around what they are. And that's where I think the Bears coaching staff went off the rails.
Well, there was a interview. I don't know how I remember this crap, Kevin, but interview with Jim Finks, right? And I think they had Bobby Douglas maybe at the time. And so they asked Jim Finks, why don't more teams have a running quarterback, because it adds obviously quite a dimension to the game. And he said, well, here's the problem. He goes, one is there's not very many of them around. And if you're going to run all the time, the chances of you getting hurt, this is even back when it was a 14-game schedule, chances of getting hurt are pretty high. And he says, if you want to go that road as an organization, ideally you would have all three of your quarterbacks, because people used to carry three in those days, all three of your quarterbacks would be the same style, so you only needed one offense. Because you can't get three guys, because there aren't three guys. He goes, so as soon as your first guy goes down, if he goes down, now you've got somebody who has a whole different, you need essentially two offenses if you're gonna plan for anything.
No, I agree with you. In fact, that's what Baltimore has done. Because, you know, they rely a lot on their quarterback's running ability, and as a result, what they have done is their number two guy is a clone. He's not as good, but what he is the same style, and he can play this, and so they don't have to change up everything.
That's why I think Pittsburgh is a really rare opportunity with Wilson and Fields to have two people of essentially the same style, one just older than the other. Right?
Well, I agree with you. I think you're right.
And I think those guys, as the year goes by, with good coaching, are going to be sort of interchangeable. I mean, obviously one guy's 35, so he's not moving.
Well, the other aspect of that is one guy could actually see over some of the linemen too.
Yeah, well, that's an issue. I don't know how the rest of their team is, but just the idea of what you got, I mean, you can't waste those kinds of picks, because it's not who you got, it's who you didn't get. I mean, the Packers, who knows how this guy's going to play out, but they went, what, was it 25 or 30 years using only two number one picks for quarterback? They didn't even use, Favre wasn't even a number one pick, was he? They got him.
No, they traded, I forget what they traded for him, because he wasn't their pick either.
He was
Atlanta's pick.
Wasn't the coach?
They went and got him after a year.
Wasn't the coach an assistant at the place where Favre was or something?
Southern Mississippi.
His first pro team.
Oh, I think it was Atlanta, if I'm not mistaken.
It wasn't then. Who was his coach's name? Favre. Who was the guy who was there forever? And ended up going to Seattle.
Holmgren. Mike Holmgren.
Wasn't Holmgren?
I think he was a Walsh guy.
A Walsh guy.
Yeah. You know Walsh.
But I'm saying he had some connection to Favre. Was he an assistant in Atlanta, or what was he?
I don't know.
Because he knew who he was when he brought him over. I mean, I don't know.
But I think everybody knew who he was.
Well, I mean, I thought he coached him somewhere, someplace, or whatever. Maybe he didn't.
But regardless, you know, yeah. Whatever it is, they liked him. They liked him coming out of college and might have drafted him then if they had the opportunity and didn't get the opportunity.
Well, and that was really the advantage the Bears had with Walter Payton, because in those days, people thought running backs were really important. You know, they are, but
They were, because the rules hadn't changed to favor passing yet.
Right. So the Bears actually had a halfback named Walter Payton, who lasted what, 12 years. So you didn't have to use another number one pick on a halfback for 12 years. That gave you essentially four other people, because everybody else was doing it every 3 years, right?
This guy's got, and he just didn't miss games.
Yeah.
You know, he was. that guy was such a treat to be, being a fan of the Bears. That guy was such a treat to watch, and he, I think he missed one game in his rookie year, and that was it.
Yeah, and he's still pissed about that, or if he was alive, he'd be pissed about it because he thought he could have played. Anyway, it is what he gave you, but it's also the fact that you picked up essentially two number one picks that nobody else had, because they're drafting a running back every 3 or 4 years. And you use them on somebody good, hopefully.
Yeah, so a more typical look at a draft pick would have been somebody like Neil Anderson, who was Peyton's replacement. He was a really good player.
Yeah.
But he was a really good player who lasted 5 or 6 years, and that was more typical of
what you expect
out of a running back.
Well, even your best guys were... guys like Brockington. Who was the guy that they had on Houston? What the hell's his name? Earl Campbell. Yeah. And if you ran 30 times a game, you had a 5-year career. And then you were lucky to walk off the field after 5 years, right? I mean, and that's what halfbacks did and running backs did in those days. Even the bus. I mean, how many? Well, he was more than 5 years. The guy from Notre Dame.
Oh, right? Yeah, he played a long time. Jerome Bettis, sure.
Yeah. That was a. Part of the game. So the Sox get rid of Dylan Cease. I'm waiting to get the call, Kevin, to come and pitch. Do the Sox have anybody? They've lost.
Be serving them up underhanded, huh?
They've lost? What? How many of their best players? Four, five?
Well, although it's really kind of strange to hear the term White Sox and best players in the same sentence.
Well, I mean, the shortstop was a talent. I mean, he was might have been a disruptor a little bit, but he's certainly a guy that. You miss the ability.
Well, you do, but he was god awful last year. How much are you gonna pay him?
Yeah, well, no, but he had all his personal. That's right. But I mean, still, is that they've got how many people on the team that are even major league should be on a major league team? They don't have the third base anymore, do they?
Oh, they're gonna be terrible. They were unwatchable last year. I think they're gonna be unwatchable this year again.
If only they had a new stadium.
That'd probably do it.
That would do it. All right, Kevin, we'll talk at you on Wednesday. SPV is up 35, NASDAQ is up 202. We're counting NVIDIA. It's up $25 now. The conference to take us to the promised land today, and they have before. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks. Mr. John Flanagan.
You wealthy. Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at cognoshr.com. Cognos HR. Innovation in Human Resources. Licensed in Illinois and
Hello, Arizona. This is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so.
I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Loading up back Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. We got Mr. Ryan, Matt Byrne on the board. You guys, too many names, too many guys.
Man. Yeah, too many people.
Yeah, and I can tell you from the other guys because you do a better. I didn't say that.
You didn't say nothing.
I said nothing.
I didn't hear anything.
No, S&P futures up 34, NASDAQ futures up 198. We're trying to run up here. Last week was not the best. Matter of fact, where were we Friday? Friday, the Dow's down 190, S&P's down 33, and NASDAQ up down 155. So the NASDAQ has made that back today so far in the pre-market. So is the S&P, almost exactly the same number, down not so much. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 47.3%, the FTSE up 15.2%, CAC around up 11.1%, not so much there. Over in Asia, big rally in the Nikkei, up 1,000 points, it's 2.7%. Bank of Japan is meeting today, so we're trying to see what they're going to do. They might put more money in the system. They're trying to get back over 40,000, 39,740. Hang Seng up 16, that's almost flat, 16,737. But the Shanghai is up 30, that's a full 1%. China shares are up like, what, 6 days in a row or something? Greg, something like that. The bonds unchanged, 4.30 to Bund. Up 2 basis points, 2.46. Japan down 2 basis points, 0.77. Oil up 40 cents, 81.44. Greg, are we going to call this a breakout here, or are we just at the top end of the range? I'd say we need another buck to the upside before we call it a breakout. Brent up 35 cents, 85.67. Natural gas up a dime, 1.75. But it got down lower than that 1.68 that we thought was going to be the bottom for forever. So shows you how much you should listen to us. RBOB up 2 cents, 274. We have the U.S. dollar. The euro is at 109, where it's been like for a real long time. Same thing with the British pound, 127. Almost unchanged on both of them. We've got gold up $1.90, 21.63. Silver unchanged, 25.38. That's the one that's broken out, silver to the upside. We'll see if it goes higher from 25, but every time it got there, it's been getting whacked, and this time it's not as of yet. Copper unchanged at 412, which is also high for that. Bitcoin down 20 bucks, 68,302. Just as a way of being wild on Friday, this MicroStrategy, which pretty much is all Bitcoin now, and at noon on Friday, the thing's trading like 1,700, the stock. The straddle for that 3 hours later was $50, which is really, really something. And guess what, Greg? It closed at 90. Went up 90 bucks.
Yep. 6%.
6%. And now it's back down to 1755. But still, the thing is bizarre.
We put on the website, we put copper and gold and Bitcoin on under tickers, too, if you click on
wow.
it.
Wow.
So, you see,
Matt, what do you got for us? Trevi Weather Sports, and we'll talk a little more about this website. And we're also going to grill Mr. Flanagan on what's going on in the world.
Absolutely. It's currently 6:39 a.m. on March 18th, 2024. As far as traffic, construction on the Kennedy has started up again and expected to continue until late fall this year. Currently expect heavy traffic from Austin to Kedzie Avenue. As far as weather, 27 degrees in Chicago, partly cloudy skies this morning. High temperature of 36 degrees today. We're back to cold temperatures this week. Tomorrow, our warmest day this week with a high of 52, and we're expected to be 40 degrees and under until Sunday. Yeah, it's going to be very, very chilly. Not a good start for tomorrow, which is the first day of spring. It certainly does not feel like that. Down in Phoenix, Arizona, 50 degrees this morning, mostly clear skies, a high of 74 degrees, and clear, sunny skies expected. The MLB spring training has started up, and the Cubs played against the Rangers and won yesterday 8-6. Meanwhile, the White Sox had a tied game with Oakland Athletic at 3-3. As well as that, in the NHL, Blackhawks beat Sharks 5-2. And in college basketball, Illinois beat Wisconsin 93-87, and Auburn won against Florida 86-67.
Illinois ended up with a 3 seed, right?
Very nice, yes, that's right.
The Irish women ended up with a 2 seed. Now, that's the good news, except they're in the same bracket as North Carolina, was undefeated. So getting out of the bracket might be trouble. Do we have Mr. Flanagan?
We do indeed, yeah.
John, how are you?
Are you
recovered from your celebrating?
Celebrations aren't what they used to be, Tom.
Well, I'm dying to find out the story from the place downstairs that had the street blacked off and they opened up at 8 o'clock on Saturday. Because, of course, you got to be totally trashed before you go to the parade. I mean, you can't just... but there's MicroStrategy before we complete the thought. Stock is trading, it's trading $17.65 down $17. But let's look at the...
We're talking MSTR?
Yes.
Right.
The $17.75 straddle as of Friday night. This Friday's straddle, for those that don't know, it's the sum of the call and the put price. And if you look at those things, it's not, I guess it could be a trading vehicle, but it's essentially the market's estimation of what the chances of how big the movement's going to be this week. Greg, in your wildest imaginations, what do you think the straddle is for this Friday night?
I don't know. If it were me, I'd set it at another 5%.
Which would be what?
What's the stock? 1,700?
Yeah.
1,700, 5%, so probably like $85.
John, that's a really
not even gonna try. Scott.
That's a really, really bad guess, Greg, for a guy who knows as much about the business.
It's a really bad
guess. What it is?
Uh oh.
$350. Can you even imagine that?
Well, it looks like I got run over a couple times.
It's 20%. Five.
Are there earnings or something? Does the company even make money?
Oh, I don't know. If Bitcoin goes up, I guess they make money. If they sell it, that's all they got. Well, I mean, they still do. What else do they do? They do some software, don't they? It didn't start out as a Bitcoin holder. Things stock's been around a while. But
So they've got $15 billion worth of Bitcoin, but their market cap is $30 billion.
If you look at the math, if it's just the Bitcoin, they should be 800 or 1700.
So they got lots of IP.
Little premium, yeah. Premium, just a bit. But
makes
sense. How do you buy that straddle, but then how do you sell it? I mean,
supposedly a bunch of people got blown out shorting that, right? They were long Bitcoin.
A lot of people got blown out when Bitcoin went down, too.
GBTC and then short MicroStrategies.
Yeah. But a lot of people got clobbered when Bitcoin went down, when it crashed the first time. I'm going to say the first time because I think there might be another time, but we'll see on that. So, John, guess what? I had a stop last night at the Tripoli real quickly coming home from my brother's, hoping to catch the owner and the people there, and I did. So what was yesterday the anniversary of? Not a good one, even though it's St. Patrick's Day.
March 17th. The lockdowns 2 years ago?
In 2020.
Wow.
It's been 4 years.
All just kind of blends together.
Yeah.
That was a dark weekend, let me tell you.
So that night on the 16th, I remember the 16th was I think it was a Monday. It was a Monday, because they just had the St. Patrick's Day celebration downtown, and that's Sunday, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Monday night was kind of a dead night, and so I went down to the series. Said goodbye to everybody there, went to Lagos, and then went to the Tripoli. And I said, I know these places someday will reopen. I just hope when they do, they're the same people I care about, and nobody gets basically their head cut off. And they all managed to make their way through with varying degrees of success. The series ended up being closed longer because they you know, they were in a big building and they just couldn't open.
18 months.
Yeah, and the Lagos ended up trying to do the best they can on a busy street. They ended up with a little, remember those really stupid little bubble that was around every table individually? You see those things, Greg? Remember those?
Yeah.
And people are walking out with like plates of pasta through the snow and getting ducking in and handing people their dinner in the little domes. In the little bubble outside with a candle or a little heater in there. It was so
romantic, though.
Yeah, it was so stupid. And people are driving by in cars, honking at you and laughing at you. And the Tripoli managed to, because the neighborhood really likes the place, they did carryouts, and they ended up, when they opened up outside, they had the back, they brought a pizza thing in. But people came by, wouldn't just get the sandwich, they'd get a carryout drink, just because they wanted to keep the place afloat, because it's a neighborhood spot. So they managed to somehow make it through. They probably got a little PPP money. I hope they did. I never asked. And they managed to hang in there with the same ownership. But, of course, the place across the street closed. The place that was on the corner of Clybourne and Sheffield. Actually, Gary Fensick used to own that place way back in the day.
Oh, yes, the Hunt Club. Yeah.
Yeah, and they ended up closing. It's now a dog food joint, of all things. Hmm. They had a beautiful outside area in there. Not much in the way of parking, but they closed. So two bars right around the Tripoli closed. So I mean, it's not like when you compare places that are open.
I thought the Hunt Club was on State Street.
I think it moved some. It was a different name when it closed, Jan. I forget what the name was.
Yes, it changed names.
Yeah, it changed names. I think when Fensick got out of it somehow and it wasn't the Hunt Club anymore, and that might have moved to State Street. You're right, Greg. Who knows how long it was going to last or how many people were going to die, you know, from what they were saying on that night. But it's been 4 years. And how many years are going to take us to work through people not knowing how to talk to people not knowing how to do it? I mean, it's pretty scary. All everybody talks about is how, you know, some of the younger people don't have a clue on how to even talk on a phone, or they have friends they've never even actually met except for online. It's, I don't know, well, because we found out, Jan, just how pack animals we all really are, aren't we?
Well, you know, depending on who's leader of the pack.
Well, that's more, another.
Less painful, so. Well, you know, at least we had elections that year, Tom. Remember the Tuesday? Elections weren't suspended, so.
So I was.
We had our priorities straight up.
I was listening yesterday. Tomorrow is a big election day here in Chicago with this. For those that don't. No, one of the biggest things on the ballot, and they're fighting back and forth between the courts and evidently the Supreme Court in Illinois, which I wouldn't listen to for whatever. There's a proposal on the ballot for changing the transfer tax whenever you change a piece of property. And it's currently, what, 2%, Jen, or something?
Yeah.
And now they're saying under $1 million is going to drop, what, to 1.8 or something? But over $1 million, it's going to start ratcheting up. So if you have if you sell someplace for $2 million, they want 4%. Now it's not 4% on the whole $2 million. It's 1.8 on the first million, and then it's 2.2 on the second, right? That's the way it works its way up. And above how many million it goes to 5% or 6?
It's ridiculous. Yeah,
it's totally ridiculous. And so they had two people on there.
It's not ridiculous. It's equitable.
Equitable, yeah, equitable. So there's two people on there debating it. And what's the show? It's not on Sunday. There's a show. It's like you know, one of those national news shows, except sometimes they have two people on there.
BBM radio.
Yeah, and it's
like the morning show at Issue or something.
Yeah. And they have a guy on there, and then they got, of course, the obligatory lady who, you know. One of the current politicians, and you know, I just, Jen, I don't necessarily. People have their points of view, right? And everybody should have their points of view. But somewhere along the line, if you start talking economics, you need to have had a remedial class in it. You would think, but I would never go somewhere and debate. You know, how to set up a crack tower in a refinery, because I don't belong in the room. I don't know anything about it, right? Yet people we'll talk about equity and this stuff and whatever. And the guy is talking about how it's the same thing as the property tax. It's going to affect prices all along the line, and it's an increase in taxes. And whenever you have an increase in taxes, if your goal is to help the homeless get into places cheaper, you're going exactly against yourself. The idea is not to tax the industry so the city can manage like a side industry and essentially put people in areas for cheaper, because then the city's going to have to pay more, because everybody knows that when you, if you sell the place or you just bought it, your cost just went up 2%. So you're going to have to recoup that cost. And she had no idea of the theory of it. She was just talking about how equitable it was, how we really need to help these people. And by the way, the best thing you do is you find the people that have the money or are leaving or are doing something. And she was ecstatic that they had dreamed up a new revenue stream for whatever it is. Whatever.
Yeah. There's nothing in this referendum about where this money will go.
Oh, actually, John, they believe there is. They actually believe in there. Now, that's what I'm asking you. In there, they believe that this money is absolutely targeted, that the mayor cannot take it into the general fund. It has to be just for homeless. Is that even true, or is that even possible?
Not even possible, Tom. First of all, I mean, if the goal of this is to reduce homelessness, I think the most counterproductive thing you could do is provide a revenue stream to keep it going,
yeah,
which is all this is going to do. It's not going to end it. There's never been any locality that I know of that has earmarked money for improving, you know, the life of homeless people. That you can't point to where the dollars have gone up and the situation has actually improved. The number of homeless people in LA has skyrocketed, and the money for it just keeps going up. It isn't like this, you know, causes a downturn in the number of homeless people. It simply builds it into the system.
Well,
so
at least two or three people I heard this weekend, and again, they could be totally screwed up. Like I said, they don't seem to understand the numbers on this at all. And I'm not saying good or bad on a policy. I mean, every tax you have has a negative, you know, a negative thing to it. The question is can you at least work the negative part through and say, well, it's worth it in the long run? But you can't even make that decision if you don't know the negative things it's gonna cause, right? But I mean,
right.
I heard like two or three people say though that this money is actually earmarked for just this purpose. It'd be the first time I've ever seen something like that, John. I mean, obviously your water reclamation, your mosquito abatement, all that stuff is earmarked for those areas. How does that get to happen legally? I guess is my question. I mean, how do you know that on your tax bill, there's a part that goes to the park district that I think actually does go to the park district? I mean, how do you create that? Is it the state do that? The city? How does that even work?
Well, nobody can create it such that you can enforce it. Look at the COVID money, Tom. How much of the COVID money was earmarked for COVID?
Well, that's what I'm saying. But some stuff actually is earmarked. I mean, I don't
buy that is, they can make that stick, because there's too many people who are. Think about it. If they were to earmark it for homeless as an issue, and that means it gets plowed into tent companies. So,
John, you're missing my question. My question is, what is the difference between money coming here from a government essentially earmarked for COVID, and a separate tax line, and the tax bill that actually is earmarked? How does one become the other is my question. In other words, if this thing became all of a sudden now all the real estate transfer taxes are going to be a totally separate line just for the homeless, it could be like the park district or the water reclamation district or the mosquito abatement district. In other words, how does the mosquito abatement district come into fruition? How does it become a separate thing? I guess my question is that a state or a city? What is that?
It's a county. You know,
oh, it's a county
mosquito
thing.
Prevention,
okay.
The library districts, all these things have levies, you know, that they allocate to fit the various taxing bodies, depending on what services they have there and what needs to be done with them. So it's something that, you know, to fund those things requires an allocation of money from the tax revenue.
But now they can't steal that and use it for something else.
Well, it's not like it's earmarked to go only there. If it's another, if it's a different, you know, situation a couple of years from now, and the imbalance has shifted somewhere else, and they need more mosquito abatement than they need books for the libraries. It'll
so you're saying even though this money is earmarked for the mosquito abatement district, if the mayor or the county president wants to steal it, they can.
Well, it's not a set amount. It's such that it can't, in years where they've got, you know, an excess, or they don't need anything done, that they can't put it someplace else too. So all these outfits have to justify what revenue they're looking
okay,
for.
Okay, so even though I'm sending this in to the school district, I can't believe it doesn't go to the school district, don't you? I mean, I don't know if it's a separate line on the tax return or tax bill.
Well, I mean, this is an old story in Illinois time where money earmarked for higher education went, you know, anyplace else, or money allocated for pensions went anyplace else, but not to the places where it was requested or where it was demanded.
Well, that's what I'm trying. I don't know that you know the answer because you're pretty good at dodging. There's a difference, I think. I don't know if I'm beating this up, but the thing, because the guy who lived 2 doors down from us, he was one of the original guys who ran the lottery. When the lottery came in, it was, quote, earmarked for schools, but it wasn't a separate tax item or anything. I don't think it was a hard law. It was earmarked. It was somebody's BS, basically. Right? It wasn't...
It's all BS, Doc.
Okay,
all
so...
BS.
But I mean,
it's
I...
It's like lockbox for Social Security, you know, and that gets trucked out, you know, this money's... yeah, right. I don't buy that.
But I thought, Evergreen Park, when people paid 50% of their taxes for the schools, I actually think the schools got 50% of the taxes. I mean,
well,
I'm totally
supposed to, but that doesn't mean they always did. You know?
Oh, okay, all right. I thought they did. See, I'm being naive again. All right. Yeah. All right, so you're saying even though this is...
Even if it's mandated legislatively, that doesn't happen, you know.
Okay, well, I guess
the state, right. State contribution for higher ed is the example I used before, but that's they just, you know, the money that's by law they're supposed to contribute to each, say, community college district is a percentage of the school's budget, which is supposed to be 1/3 according to the formula, and I don't think it's been 1/3 for any community colleges in my history with the system, at least 20 years.
Right, so you're saying, again, in my increasingly accused conspiratorial negative attitude is not negative or conspiratorial enough.
Right. Well, they can always find
facts,
a superseded...
What you guys don't see is...
They need to be flexible, Tom. They often are confronted with situations that they didn't foresee, you know, but once you adapt the formula that all it takes is money to fix this, then it doesn't matter if it's revenue stream or not. The more money you throw at it, the worse you make the problem. It's just an old, you know, saw. But that's why I don't buy this. The worst thing would be if the money really were earmarked for it, because you know it would be misspent on all sorts of other things, and the homeless problem would just continue to grow, which is what's going to happen anyway. So
I want to come back in life as a community organizer. Just saying.
Well, it might be more fulfilling to being like a union organizer like Brandon Johnson.
You can't. You got to be. If you're going to be a union organizer, it has to be a public union. The other guys don't do that well. I don't think. I mean, the head of the carpenters union doesn't do as well as the head of the teachers union. I don't think.
Nobody does.
Yeah, nobody. Nobody.
Did you see their latest demand, by the way?
No. What? I can't even imagine.
An increase in starting salaries by $51,000.
$251,000 or by $51,000?
By $51,000.
God. What are you going to do to be a teacher?
Apparently less and less these days.
It seems like, you know, this whole thing is sort of... Greg, you were going to say something.
I was going to say your tinfoil hat. You're making your tinfoil hat right over here.
Oh, all right.
Nice and shiny.
I got a whole closet full of it.
This whole concept of other people's money going to other people, that's a recent phenomenon, Jan. It really is. When I say recent, well, if you're 15 years old, 20 years ago isn't recent, right? It's before you got here. But for us, 20 years ago is not that long. And you know, this whole concept of if you want something, just find something we haven't already taxed and tax it. Especially if you find something that you're never going to pay. But here's one of my concerns I was getting with. I'm listening to this lady, and you can't, what is it? No man can do one thing, right? There's a Chinese philosopher, I can't figure out who said that. when you have inflation doing what it's doing, I'm going to say 25 years ago, well, 2007, the median price of a house, it got to 235, crashed down, and now it's 406 because we've had this unprecedented inflation. Well, not unprecedented, but unprecedented for a long time. And now what happens on the thing that I think this lady is not able to see far enough ahead is if you take that and extend it out and say, okay, we're going to have 6 or 7% inflation for the next 10 years, what that means, if you compound that 400 and some thousand, you got to be pushing a million, right?
Yep.
So at some point, if the federal government's doing what they're doing and we're debasing our currency, it could be that every house is $1 million 15 years from now, and guess what? Everybody pays the new fee. Which, again, is my point that the people who have benefited by inflation the most is the government. But some of these $1 million homes that people have right now are $1.5 million. They were $750 10 years ago, right?
Right.
So they should pay more. Why necessarily? I mean, I don't know. It's not just one. But we had I go back to the one of my worst interview probably, was the head of the Chicago Teachers Union pension fund. And I was asking a couple questions, like, you know, simple stuff like, you know, you sort of, I'm not saying anybody doesn't deserve what they're promised. I mean, I think they are. But you must realize that by the time, you know, it's 20 years from now or 15 years from now, the word pension is going to be out of the dictionary except for public people. And other people are, you know, they don't even know what a pension is because nobody gets one anymore except for public people. And he's like, well, what's the problem with that? And I said, well, you know, if you look at the Chicago Teachers Union salaries and their pensions compared to the rest of society, they're increasing at a much faster rate. And at some point that those two lines are just going to be, they're not something other people can pay. And his response was, no matter what happens, the other people always have the money. Our people have been promised this dough, and they've got to get it. And now, of course, I'm now being an ass. And I said, so, okay, if enough people leave the city where there's one guy left, he better be a very rich man. He goes, absolutely. Was absolutely convinced, no matter what the numbers are, no matter whatever hardship other people have, that these people were promised money by some mayor or somebody, they deserve theirs if the last person has to be tossed out in the street for it. And, you know, it's an attitude that I don't get. But obviously it's out there. Just saying.
I mean, well, you're a prophetic, Tom. You see the figure that Chicago between 2000 and 2020 lost over 250,000 people?
Yeah.
So there will be a last person standing at some point. Better be pretty rich.
Well, Jan, who was the last census? Didn't Chicago drop under the three? We got to go to break here, but dropped under 3 million people. Well, the reason for that, a lot of it was because you tore so many people out of the city with the Dan Ryan and all this construction. But didn't we get back almost to 3 million in like 2002 or something, and now it's back way back down or something?
What? Way back down.
During break, you know how to look that up. Why don't you look that up while we're doing break? Because it's pretty scary how far down we're going here. SP futures up 42 now, and NASDAQ's up 220. We had a bad week last week. We're going to come right back and smack that market. We're going right up back over to new records. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning. Smell, you know that gasoline smell. Smells like the.
Hello, my big stocks and jocks. I'm Tim Owl. That burn on the board, S&P futures up 41, NASDAQ futures up 215. We're gonna start this week out hot. This morning, we'll see if we stay there. We've got gold down a bit. We've got oil up a bit. So we've got things. Yeah, but Jan, when you talk about napalm in the morning, did you ever see the History Channel thing and World War One and the trenches and all the different tricks people use to try and move? Because obviously you couldn't go anywhere against a machine gun if you're just walking. Not too good. I saw this thing the first day that they invented the flamethrower. And all of a sudden you see somebody, and it was devastating to the trenches. Because the thing projects, 100 yards or something at least. Until somebody figured out, if you just shoot right into the flame, you hit the guy holding it. So you didn't want to be the guy who was holding it. Just saying. Do we still have Jan?
Still here.
So yeah, you don't want to be the guy holding it. And how clever people are when they talked about there was kind of a treaty and gas. I don't know how I got on the subject. This is because of the napalm in the morning. That you couldn't put gas in artillery shells. So you know what they did? They had somebody in the dark of night when there was no moon snuck out of the trench and crawled on his belly, bunch of guys, and they brought hoses to near the other guy's trench, and then the next morning turned gas on through the hoses. Now, it wasn't an artillery shell, so it technically wasn't against the rules of warfare, but the first morning, the wind blew the other way and blew it back at the guys who sent it out there. But eventually became pretty successful. Then it was gas all over the place in World War One, and everybody had gas masks, and one of my aunts was through the went through the Blitz in London. She and her mother spent the whenever night there was bombs, a bomb shelter in the backyard, and her brother and father slept next to each other under the big dining room table. How would you like that? But her father came back from World War One. I think he's either had half a lung or was missing a whole. They had to take a lung out because of the gas. Can you imagine a surgery to take a lung out in 1918? Good Lord, what'd they use for painkillers and what'd they use, ether for the surgery, if that?
I think it was just alcohol.
I think ether had been, yeah, had been invented.
There was ether, which
whiskey,
was, much more dangerous, anesthetic, harder to control or predict. And of course, any post-op infections and stuff, forget it, because you don't have penicillin yet or sulfa drugs.
I think, did you ever have ether? I think I did once.
I did not. My brother did for a tooth extraction, I remember. This is like 1961 or so, I think.
I think I had my tonsils out when I was like four. I remember them putting that stupid mask over your face and somebody putting a couple drops on it and then you were gone. That was ether, right? They put the mask on and then they dropped the thing and you inhaled it, right? It wasn't in your blood.
Right.
Ugh. Anyway, how did we get off on
then
that?
Then you had to work fast.
You had to work fast. Speaking of working fast, talk about a wacky story. When I was on the trading floor, there was some function. I actually went out and bought myself a tux rather than renting them, because what a pain in the ass renting them was. So I get this really nice tux. Everybody knows I've got it, right? So I ended up getting set up with probably three or four dates from girls that have their friends come, they knew from college and so forth, and they wanted to go to a formal function, and they wanted to set their girlfriend up with a date. No guy was going to go out and like rent a tux for that, right? But they knew I had one. So I ended up with... Anyway, I met two or three of the nicest ladies. One lady from Ohio, she was a eye surgeon, and she would do big animals. So if like a lion or like a shark or something had needed eye surgery, she would go to the zoo and do it. And she goes, I was always very worried that the anesthesiologist had given us thing enough. I didn't want the lion or the bear waking up with me working on his eye.
Chasing me around the operating room.
Yeah. She goes, I'm sitting there going, I said, I bet that made you nervous. Oh, yeah. How do people even get jobs like that? But thank God for them. I mean, anyway. But, John, we're moving into this election thing tomorrow. You know, as much as everybody likes or certainly thinks that we don't want to be Russia. By the way, your buddy Putin just won again in a very fair election. He had a landslide, from what I hear, when he killed all his opponents. Makes it easier, doesn't it?
Always works.
Yeah, kind of works. So it's another 6 years. I thought he was... Wasn't there some deal a while ago where he couldn't run again, but he became some other title... Where he was that for life, now he's running for what is
it? Yeah, it was a term limited thing that they got, you know, work around.
But now he's back to just being the president for six more years, right?
Right.
There's no.
Right.
All right. So he's, why don't he just, I mean, somebody's got to bump him off or something, right? Or what has to happen there for him to be gone?
You might get somebody worse.
Well, I mean, it was interesting what Carl was saying, couple of weeks ago, because Netanyahu is now, Schumer said there needs to be elections. And of course, Netanyahu is all pissed off at Schumer, but I mean, Carl's right. In the U.S., we actually give a crap about this stuff. We had an election during the Civil War, and when Lincoln won, I mean, the people basically said, well, we didn't get every vote, but it was, you know, it was a, I won't say it's a, you know, whatever. What do they call it when the whole world is spoken in your favor, even though you won by one vote? But he essentially, people reaffirmed the fact that his policy was what they wanted. Same thing with Roosevelt. He didn't cancel elections in World War II. I mean, the idea that you know, the Netanyahu is saying, well, you can't have an election during wartime. Wait a minute. Yeah, you can. Where am I wrong here?
Well, Zelensky said the same thing.
Well, I'm saying, yeah. I mean, it's not right. It's not the American way, at all. Mm. But it appears to be everybody else's way. You know, wait a minute, you can't kick me out. I'm too busy.
Well, you know, the Civil War election is interesting too, because Lincoln's opponent was George McClellan, who had been the Union general that, you know, Lincoln relied on early on in the war, that dumped because he wouldn't fight. So you really had a kind of, you know, election between the war strategists of the period. You know, and at that point, I think people knew that, you know, overall that Lincoln was likely to bring the war to a quicker military conclusion, and they didn't have much confidence that McClellan would do anything different from what he had done as a general. So it was kind of a you know, election on the issue of the conduct of the war itself, between the, you know, two of its protagonist. So pretty interesting election.
Well, the times were so different, Jan. When you look at World War II, and you had somebody like George Marshall, who, because of his massive experience in other screw-ups that we had done along the way, was not about to send anybody, you know, if he could, in harm's way if they didn't have enough bullets, grenades, toilet paper, food, you name it. As he wanted to give his guys, our guys, the best chance to get out of there in one piece. Different times. I mean, Lincoln, McClellan always wanted everything in his favor before he went to battle. And Lincoln basically said, you can't do that. You can't give everybody else time. But the difference was they were losing so many people in the camps, like the Union camp, the Confederate camp. We just had an outbreak here of measles outbreak. We had a couple of cases here in Chicago. Measles were, if you're in an army camp living outside without the best sanitation, without the best food and everything else, measles were a massive killer. So if McClellan lost so many people just to disease and stuff in camp, Lincoln's like, you're losing them anyway, basically. It was just a different time, right, John? It wasn't...
Right, right.
You know, I'm not saying you should go butcher a bunch of people in a battle, but I guess if they're going to die, I mean, it's horrible even to think that way, but just those are the logistics of the times, right?
Well, the number of, you know, casualties because of health,
yeah,
you know, rivaled casualties in battle, or injuries that resulted in death even long after the war, where people died slowly, but you know, getting dysentery, getting typhus, you know, malnutrition, whatever, that tremendous toll. We have no concept today.
You know, in the prison of war camp, same thing: water, disease, food. I mean, Andersonville was the one where how many people died there, for God's sake.
Camp Douglas in Chicago, Confederates. Well, 4,000 of them are buried in the Oakwood Cemetery.
In World War II, even though didn't we lose way more pilots in training than we did in the war?
Yeah.
I mean, you sort of don't even recognize some of this stuff, because that's why you need to read history and say, well, geez, this is unbelievable. Mm. You compare it to
the influenza cases in World War I exceeded the military deaths.
Yeah, I mean, because.
By a lot.
Well, I mean, you and I think, had the measles and had some influenza, but the 50s and 60s moms were amazing caregivers. You were warm, you were comfortable, you got chicken soup, and you got through it. If we were out somewhere freezing and with other diseases on top of it, maybe not. Right?
You remember the darkened rooms, Tom, for measles patients?
For the who?
The sensitivity to light. Well, while you have the disease, it's really painful.
Yeah.
So you would keep a kid with measles in a room with all the blinds closed, no lamps on or anything.
We didn't have to worry, but the black and white TV was okay. It wasn't very bright.
Yeah. You couldn't see anything out of it anyway.
Well, so, Jan, we talked about last night. Shift gears for a little bit. Just from your perspective, I mean, from what I was talking about with Dan Janitas and Carl and so forth, these debt levels on individuals and governments, when do you suppose... I mean, we have traditionally been pretty good. What did Churchill say about America? They always do the right thing after they tried everything else first. Someplace, somewhere, our guys, I don't think they're all that dumb. They have to realize that this is a problem. What do you suppose, other than inflating our way out of it, which is really pretty stupid and will bury most people, what do you think the strategy, I mean, as much as what I think is going on in Washington, and you and I have different opinions about who's doing what and why, I think the money is always talking, and people are using the fighting between the right and the left to steal us all blind. I mean, that's where, to me, the money is. Same thing in Chicago. I mean, everybody wants, they can, how many, we had this discussion at dinner the other night. I drive by these guys every day at Elston Avenue there. Now we're up to what? How many $1 billion we're spending on the homeless? Gee, those people aren't getting a dime. The money's not going to them. I mean, who's kidding who?
It never does, though.
It never does. And, it's like, it's okay, but someplace, somewhere, somebody has to realize that. Actually, I read an article once where somebody said a good government, if you have a really capitalistic kind of society, which is unfettered, right, 10% of the people are going to steal the money from the other 90% of the people, either with government's help or whatever. So somehow you got to get it back to the regular people so that the next group can steal it again, because it's actually very healthy. You know, and I'm not saying I agree with all that stuff, but there's some truth to it. I mean, right now we have how much percentage of the market going up and everything is being sucked away by 1% of the people. But somewhere along the line here, somebody has to sit down on both sides of the aisle, maybe happen to have a beer together and go, "Hey, Joe, I'm a Democrat. I know you're a Republican, but we gotta stop this. I mean, we can't be 40-45% in the hole every year, whether it's a war on or not. It doesn't seem to matter. We've got five more years of this before we blow up. Are we going to wait till we blow up, or are we going to think about it sooner?"
We're too insulated, Tom, from what it means to blow up. And, you know, nobody around really can remember clearly what it was like, and therefore they're pretty, you know, oblivious to it and aren't very afraid of it. So I don't know, you know, what the time frame is for all of this to unravel, but there's clearly, a dead end ahead where we're going to have to reinvent the economy. And this is, of course, going to be, you know, when there's a push for a digital currency or something that will just pull the rug out from everybody, and you lose total control over whatever the currency is that they deign to let you have. You're going to be controlled in how you spend it. So people better watch out, because they think it's tough now. You wait till you have even less say in how things are going. And I really think this is the direction they want the country to head in. Everything to me indicates that this is all by design. You wouldn't do it this way unless you wanted it this way, clearly.
But the question is, who's the they? Is it international corporations?
Well, it's the Fed. It's, you know, central banks generally. It's the uniparty. It's the people who think they know more than, you know, either the extremes of the parties. They, you know, can connect more of the dots than somebody else, and they're hand in glove with, you know, other countries, supposedly our arch enemies. We're all in the same.
But is it the ITT phenomenon just on steroids, where Harold Janine thought that he was more effective as a leader than any of the governments, and that really Microsoft and those people should be? I mean, they've got the dough. I mean, I can't believe that. Whether it's so,
they have the control, even more important. You know,
yeah, they've got. I mean, but the they must see that the things are degrading around them. I mean, I'm saying you have to keep even you got to keep your opponent afloat, or else you don't have an opponent anymore, or something. The idea that this is sustainable is, I mean, it clearly isn't. I don't think.
Well, you know, what would it look like, Tom, when the whole thing unravels? I mean, I don't want to get into dystopian, you know, fantasies here, but I don't think anybody, you know, at least the 90% of the people who were trying to pay bills and keep their families afloat, have any notion what this would mean to them. It would be their utter destruction politically and economically for generations.
Well, as a country, if we were just ourselves, okay, everybody, if the government went into hack, but the citizenry owned the paper, if you viewed us from Russia, we're flat, right?
Right.
I mean, it's not. It's a pain in the ass the way it's pulling out, but it's not. If everybody in the country was owed $100 by the government, all right, and the government couldn't pay, everybody just says, okay, forgive the $100, right? Because then what difference would it make? You owe $100, they can't pay. By the way, you're the one who got the $100, so. But that's sort of not what's happening. When you start seeing it, you know, I mean, even right now, the federal government's in a bunch of hack. But because of the money they paid out in COVID, some states are out of hack. Some cities and so forth. I mean, we're not here because actually, to a large extent, as much as I'm not the hugest fan of the man, I think Pritzker has actually used that money pretty wisely. Illinois is in way better shape than they were when he got there. But a lot of it was COVID money. Now, the city's just pissing it away, I think, to a large extent. But I think Pritzker's actually got Illinois in way better shape than it was 6 years ago, using a lot of the COVID money. But he didn't just piss it away, I don't think, John. I think he's actually got Illinois way better than it was. So, and I think some states are actually flat now, aren't they? So, I mean, if you
we're not attracting people, though, Tom. That's
I think part of that's Chicago. But I'm saying, in terms of money, though, I think Indiana got themselves flat. I'm saying a lot of states now, if you look at us all together, all right, the federal government's way worse, but a lot of states and municipalities are way better. I don't know what the total of that is. I'm guessing we're still somewhat worse, but not as bad, right? So there's a couple of people who don't owe as much. Individually...
But the long-term prospects are just as bad, Tom. I mean, the whole...
I don't disagree.
The migrant issue, just as an example, is like an unfunded mandate put upon every state. You know, some states, you know, much more acutely than others, without any kind of you know, rationale for how this is supposed to be handled. You know, the indications are that Texas can't fight this on their own.
Oh, without a doubt. Oh, they can't.
According to the Supreme Court, even. I mean, they can't, like, do what the federal government is unwilling to do. And when the federal government is unwilling to do anything about this, it doesn't matter how flush the states look today, because that's a very short window at the rate
we're going. Well, Texas can't be the U.S.'s Jordan. You know, where they have as many you know, people, refugees there as they have regular people, don't they? And somehow that guy pulls it off.
It shouldn't be. I mean, how do we get to this?
Well, I mean, because every place around them blew up. Iraq, Syria, right? They got to go somewhere. And they're in Jordan. Somehow or another, that guy, whoever he is, has got to be the best leader on earth, isn't he? I mean, somehow he manages the... I mean, you know, the place isn't in revolution or anything. How is he handling it? They can't be doing too well, but he's handling it somehow, isn't he?
Well, it's like Castro opening up the jails, you know, turning boat people loose on this country. You know, when you don't have any other solutions, you just, well, get out of here. You go somewhere else, make somebody else, you know, your benefactor.
But is there, I guess, well, we only have a few minutes. Is there any chance in the next 10 years that places like Syria, Iraq, Venezuela actually become places where somebody doesn't have to leave? That to me is somehow the core solution to this whole mess. Well, I don't see any solution there, do you?
Well, how many people at a certain level of, you know, planning or expertise would even desire that thought? They'd rather have, you know, Venezuela a basket case.
Why?
Than have it a self-sufficient, you know, where they can thumb their nose at everybody else. Nope. I don't think that the power elites, whether it's the World Economic Forum or the World Health Organization, any of these people are interested in.
Well, I don't mind getting rid of those guys. I mean, but I'm saying, what was our plan? I mean, I would think that by now Saddam Hussein would be croaked anyway. But what was our plan for busting up Iraq? We must have known that it's three people who live there that hate each other. And as much of a brute as the guy was, he kept it together. I mean, the same thing happened in Yugoslavia, right? Let's get rid of the leadership because the guy's a tyrant. Oh, by the way, nobody here likes each other. Well, duh.
I mean, then you know, the next minute we're sending troops into Kosovo. So
yeah, you know, I mean, the Middle East, Syria, at one point was a real place, right? I mean, it had some sort of a government. I mean, Lebanon certainly was. Wasn't Beirut like a tourist attraction?
Yeah, it was the Paris of the Mediterranean.
Well, okay, so is there any chance of getting these places back together? What about Iraq? I haven't heard about Iraq in 10 years, have you?
I can think a lot of our allies would want that to happen. They don't want any competition. They want something that they can control or supervise or
who's controlling Syria or Iraq? It's got to be a drain for every single country in the world. It's backing somebody over there.
But as much of a drain as it is, Tom, it's in the eyes of some world leaders, it's better to have it that kind of a drain than have it something that defies you.
I don't know.
And you can't control. As perverse as I'm making it sound, I think there's a lot of people. Whether it's Russia, us, the whole EU. Do they really want a strong Lebanon? I don't think so.
I'm not saying.
Do they want a strong any country?
I'm not talking about a. Wouldn't it be a lot? I mean, this is my Putin argument that Lou tells me I'm nuts about. Wouldn't you rather have a Ukraine you can trade with all day long and make money off of than you would think so,
but that's obviously not what people want.
Well, whoever these people are, whatever. Anyway, we're going to dash here for a second. Come back with Nancy and hang around. She always loves it if you hang around.
I can hang her for just a couple minutes today, Tom.
All right. Yeah. SP Futures up 41. NASDAQ Futures up 223. We're all going to be wealthier today, at least, it looks like, which is a good thing. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jock.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to ptisecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's ptisecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
What is your nationality?
I'm a drunkard.
And that makes Rick a citizen of the world.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Matt Byrne on the board. We have green today. Green in honor of St. Patrick's Day, which was yesterday. SP Futures up 38.50. NASDAQ futures up 214. We got the Dow futures up. The Dow's only up 87, but what do we have? We got a couple stocks in the Dow that are down. Microsoft's actually down 262. Boeing's down to 180. Not so good. They keep having trouble with these planes, and now they're talking about. We'll talk with John and Nancy about this. About they're having all these government inspectors like they should have had. The last thing you need in any manufacturing facility is the need for a bunch of government people looking over your shoulder. Boy, that's insane. Over in Europe, of course, maybe when you make a monopoly, maybe you have to do that. Who knows? DAX up 41.2%, FTSE up 18.2%, CAC around up 13.2%. So across the board, marginally up a little bit over there, but bullish. Nikkei over up 1,000 points, 2.67. They have a Bank of Japan meeting is today. And China shares are up as well. Hang Seng up 16, not much there, only 0.1%. But the Shanghai's up 30, that's a full 1%. So Hang Seng is under 17,000 still, 16,737. And Shanghai's 3,084, way above the 3,000 number. It ducked under for a while. So they're doing somewhat better. On Friday, Dow was down 190, S&P down 33. It's right about where it's up that much now. NASDAQ down was down 155, now it's up 210. So it's made that back plus. Bonds up 1 basis point now, 4.32. The bond up 2 basis points, 2.46. Japan down 2.76. They said the Bank of Japan is meeting today. Oil up 29 cents, 81.33. We're seeing if that's the very high end of the range or a breakout. We'll know in a couple days. Brent up 27 cents, 85.61. Natural gas up 7 cents, still at a real low, 173. I got down to 168, bounced off that, but then went back down there again, which kind of surprised me. RBOB up 2 cents, 274. We have foreign exchange right at 109 on the euro and right at 127 in British pound, so not much moving on there. We've got gold up 490 now, 21.66. Silver up 9 cents, 25.47. Silver's been the one to own the last couple weeks. Copper unchanged, but up 412, finally over $4 for the first time in a while. And we have Bitcoin down 13 bucks, let's call that flat, at 68,309. A lot of stuff there, Matt. What do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Yeah, good morning. It's currently 7:36 a.m. on March 18th, 2024. As far as traffic, construction on the Kennedy has started up again. We'll expect that until late fall this year. Currently expect heavy traffic inbound after Foster to downtown. Heavy traffic inbound and outbound for the Eisenhower from around 17th to Holman Avenue. As far as weather, Chicago, we have 26 degrees, mostly sunny skies this morning. High temperature of 36 degrees today. We're back to cold temperatures for this week. Tomorrow will be our warmest day this week with a high of 52, and we're expected to be around 40 degrees and under until Sunday. Down at Phoenix, Arizona, 48 degrees this morning, mostly clear skies. A high of 74 degrees and clear sunny skies. The MLB spring training took place yesterday. Cubs played against Rangers and won 8-6. Meanwhile, White Sox tied a game with the Oakland Athletic at 3-3. And of course, in the NHL yesterday, Blackhawks beat Sharks 5-2. And in college basketball, Illinois beat Wisconsin 93-87. And Auburn won against Florida 86-67. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
And the play-in games start tomorrow, right?
For college?
Yeah, they start tomorrow, Wednesday. I think tomorrow they start tomorrow.
Let's check on that real quick. It should. It's looking like the next game is going to be on. At least for women, will be on the 20th, and for men will be on the. Just as it loads up here.
I don't think the women have playing games. The men do.
Yeah, you're right. Should be tomorrow, March 19th.
Yeah. Do we have Nancy?
We do indeed.
Yes. Nancy, how are you?
Mm-hmm.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
Good. How are you?
Morning, hey. Nancy.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. And you?
Good. How much harassment have we given Tom this morning?
John's always harassing me.
No one's saying anything?
Yeah. What's the... why, what's today, other than St. Patrick's Day yesterday?
Well, I just thought it would be a new day to harass Tom. That's all.
Well, it's always a good day to do that. I mean, I have a question for you, Nance, we had...
You're crying because Justin Fields is leaving, right?
I 25 years, 8 number one picks for quarterbacks. That's got to be a serious record that'll never be broken. but we're happy about the new guy. We don't even know who he is, but we're happy about him.
You're happy about him.
Well,
okay.
The king is dead. Long live the king, right?
Yeah, really.
Yeah,
you're right. You're absolutely right. Who knows?
I just would like to be in that sort of business where, I mean, I never would want to lose money for people, but if I was in the money management business, which I am, to say, to have people there for like 20 years that did nothing but lose money and say, don't worry, I got a new coach, it's all good now. It's all good. I'd love to be able to do that, but I'd rather just do well for people. Anyway, my question for you, well, I have a bunch of them, but John and I have been talking. One of our listeners sent us a thing last week regarding the Federal Reserve, and you know they're talking about all debt, okay? But the, is how it's starting to really grow, and if you look at consumer debt, government debt, and mortgage debt, and everything, all of a sudden it seems, Nance, you start adding automobile debt, even auto repair debt. Which is being financed. Some of these lines are starting to go vertical, which leads me to believe that people are struggling with all of it, and maybe some of the mortgage payments are getting paid for by credit card or other things. And once they start to go vertical, you reach a point where you wonder, can we get them back? It's one thing to have them creeping up, because you can sort of, you know, figure out a way to uncreep, I think. But when you start talking about lines going vertical, I mean, I don't see how do you stop this consumer debt? And the mortgage debt is almost the same way. I mean, it's what do you make of this? Is there some kind of a solution or one? I mean,
the solution has been for years to just when you start going vertical, as you're saying, then you refinance your home and consolidate all the debt. Now that has worked for the past how many years? If you're getting in even at 4% compared to your credit card debt, that's great, right? Because they're using their house as their savings account and they're taking the money out. But since the rates are so high, people, you know, obviously the biggest number in that consolidation is going to be your house. So you're increasing, you know, 3-4% to maybe, let's say, 6%. Six to seven. You're sort of doubling that number, not quite, but you are, and then you're adding all this other debt in. So people are either going to have to start selling their homes and renting, but the rents in Chicago have reached an all-time high.
Yep.
So all the answers to the problem, which people are going to have to figure out, you're either going to have to refinance your home, you're going to have to file for bankruptcy on the credit cards, you could sell your home, buy down, things of that nature. I mean, everyone is looking, people are starting to call and look for solutions. I can say that. I'm starting to see it. But, you know, the solutions really are going to be just scenarios handed back saying, what would you like to do? Because this is about all you can do. I mean, sooner or later, you keep going through what's going to happen, right? And you know, there's only so many solutions, you're going to have to pick one and go for it.
Well, what Nancy
is... people are going to have to cut back. But I think the cutting back is tough because of the food pricing.
Well, God help you if you get a medical expense or a car repair or a roof. Yeah, I can't cut back on that.
Well, a lot of people are using the roof to get a new roof is the we've had some severe storms, so they can claim hail damage, and they've been getting them replaced that way. So at least they're not bearing the whole expense of it. I mean, they might bear some of it, but not the whole. I mean, roofs are running $15,000-$17,000
or more. If you've got a cedar roof or something.
Well, right. I mean, not, then you're talking $100,000 roofs. But I'm just saying, people are looking for answers, Tom, that they just don't have. We are not in a great economy when you're talking the way we're speaking now.
What is happening? Well, before we lose John, it's kind of a question for the Bodie, as they say in the South Side. What is happening to, I use the term, the American attitude, the American dream? I mean, when we were growing up, and certainly when our parents were growing up, the idea that, I mean, if you came home from World War II, you know, well, my stepfather never went. He was very young, and he was training to go, and then when he dropped the atomic bomb, he basically... You know, surrender. I don't know how long he was actually in, but he went through all the training and everything else. He was going to be a navigator on a plane, and then John, what happened to those guys? Did they get let go after 6 months or 8 months or what?
Yeah, they had shorter terms of service. Yeah,
but he came back on the GI Bill. But in those days, the idea that 5 years from now, 4 years from now, you would not be doing better if you worked hard and your company was growing, that you wouldn't be making more money or something, that you're, if you could afford your mortgage now, you sure as hell could afford it 5 years from now, because you're going to get a raise every year and a promotion every 2 years, that kind of thing. I'm not so sure. Is that kind of attitude now has sort of got people in trouble, hasn't it? I mean, unfortunately, that, you know, your things will be better. For a lot of people, they aren't better 5 years from now. In terms
people
of
people are giving up on the idea of having a home, let alone, you know, a home that they can afford over the, you know, long term. They're giving up on the idea of having a car, let alone two cars, which were, you know, pretty common in good times. Giving up on, you know, eating well or taking trips.
Yeah.
All these things are being cut out, I think, of people's budgets and dreams, and you know, you're left with, you know, you're just seeking sustenance. Can you keep going? Unless you have some disaster in the next couple, you know, months, maybe you'll be able to be just where you were today rather than farther along. People are not used to that way of thinking in this country, and they haven't been for, you know, going on 70, 80 years. But I think it's now coming to that.
Well, I think a lot of that's the frustration we're seeing today in people. I mean, is anybody, Nance, to your, I guess there's a couple of people, but I really don't think people are like this. When somebody gets a credit card and it says 25% interest, I don't think people say, that's okay. What they're going to say is, I'm never going to have a balance. And all of a sudden, something happens, and I guess there's some that immediately get the credit card, even if it's 25%, and run out and buy a bunch of furniture for $6,000 and say, well, I'll have it paid off in 6 months or something, or 5 months. But, I mean, people don't eagerly put themselves in debt, do they, for 25%? If they do, I hope they can go back to, like, third-grade math or something. Nobody can be that dumb, are they?
No one is that dumb. They find themselves in situations where they have to use their charge card, okay? They have no other way out, all right? And like you're saying, you have a medical bill that you have to at least make a minimum payment on. You have a car repair that you have to have the car to get to work, right? So they put it on there with all the intention, like you're saying, to have it paid off. And then, like, you know, the next hit comes. Like, you know how people say, you know, the hits just keep on coming? Well, yeah. then pretty soon they just say, okay, I have like $50 a month or $100 a month to pay on this credit card, and I just have to pay it, and whatever it is, because their choices become very limited. John, are you agreeing with what I'm seeing?
Absolutely. It's, you know, people have always felt, well, I got a credit card with a low balance on it, no balance, and I'll just keep that for a rainy day. But you can be sure a rainy day will come along eventually. And this kind
and
of
thing, rainy days. When they're using it, I mean, no one actually goes out and says, I'm going to run up this charge card. You know, they got to pay 25-29%. I mean, you see the commercials on TV where they're saying, we can get you out of your credit card debt, right? And all the people are saying, you know, I could have paid on it for 40 years. So that's not the issue. The issue is people are trying to figure out how to survive. And they're looking for an answer. And everyone finds a different answer. Some people are saying, oh, I'm going to move to Indiana, right? And then they find out that, you know, it's just as expensive because they're paying, you know, the Indiana state tax. Like, Illinois does not charge on your Social Security,
right,
and taking your retirement, where Indiana does. And then Indiana has a city tax on top of it. So in the end, and plus you probably paid more for the home. So are you any better off? I don't know.
Not if you're coming across the Chicago Skyway every day. It's $7 a ride.
and this is what I'm trying to say. Everyone's got their unique, you know, pigeonholed way of looking at it, and they're trying to figure out what they're going to do, and they feel so good when they get to, you know, to the first step of the plan, right, or the second step, to find out that they're just spending their dollars somewhere else. It's kind of like a no-sum game.
Well, Nance, how many people do you bump into? Because you're out of all the people on the show, everybody has their skill set, but you probably are closest to having your thumb basically on the pulse of every man. How many people do you run into? That's going to say We're 2000 and where are we? We're 2024 already, right, Jan? Boy, it didn't seem like we ever get here. But how many people do you run into to say, well, gee, in 2018, my wife and I were making 180 grand, and now the inflation is 40% since then. By the way, we're making, you know, 270. We're up 50%. Do you come into, other than some big, you know, changing jobs and getting a big promote, do you run into anybody like that who's up 50% in the last 4 years? And just, they're just a regular old job?
No, not in a regular old job. No, no, not at all. I mean, you don't, you see it, but you, you know, you see it maybe in the younger kids, but the older, the market I see that's getting hit is more like the 50s and 60s. They're kind of sandwiched between their children, their grandchildren, and they're, you know, they're struggling, and then their parents are struggling.
Well,
so I mean, it's just, see people getting, no one's getting that kind of a raise, Tom, without being able to switch jobs, and they really can't because they're already vested in their not, I don't want to use the word profit sharing, but retirement funding, and they just don't want to make that switch right now. They don't want to even take the chance. So, because then they, you know, have to get revested, and you're not vested for 5 years, blah, that, you know, the story just keeps going on and on. So their choices, they make choices in one area to probably stay more stable, but then they sacrifice getting any big, there are no big raises for people like that right now.
No. I mean, as you know, we went to, Audrey and I went to dinner with a couple that, really nice, first time I met them, and she, I guess, sold one of their houses, and one of their houses, she sold their house, and we had a really nice time, and they were asking me, you know, but by the way, the guy's a domer, Jen, one of us. Real nice guy, and they were asking me what's different in my business, and which is the money management business, and I said, well, you know, it's I haven't changed, but God knows about that. None of us have changed, Jen, but even a couple of us probably should have, but we haven't. I said the clients have absolutely changed, and he says to me, well, how so? And I said, well, Jan and I were on the score. We're talking, you know, 16, 18 years ago. I would get one or two couples a month. Everybody was, you know, mostly blue-collar people. I mean, regular people. Those are essentially my guys and ladies. When I say regular people, I don't normally get an institution that walks in the door. It'd be nice, but I don't, because everything is custom. You know, I can't say, well, geez, I've done 10% a year for the last 10 years, because everybody's different. The good news there is I get to customize for people. The bad news is I don't have a force everybody in the same portfolio and have one track record. Okay, so I'll have to live with that. And I said, the difference is in the people. And Nancy, I said, people would come in, they'd have $1.5 million, always seemed to be the number, that if you worked at a place and had your 401k and you contributed and the company did some of theirs and you didn't pull out money out of there to go gamble with, that's seemingly what people managed to have ready to go for retirement. Seems like a lot of money, but it's not. If that's all you have for your retirement, except for Social Security, there's no pension. I said, but those people now, they're not unencumbered. Some of them have helped with their kids' education. Some of them, somebody's divorced, and you help with their kids' education. Nobody comes out, not nobody, very people, that money has been co-opted somewhat. And now, this morning on the way in, I'm listening to News Radio 78, and they're talking about the amount of retired people that are paying something from one of their kids. The average drain, how do I get these numbers, Nancy? I have no idea. The average drain is $1,500 a month for one of your kids, one of your grandkids' education, one of something. So the retired people, essentially what used to be my bread and butter clientele, they're hurting. I mean, do you think that's right what they're saying? I mean, it seems to me that it is, but you know better than me.
I absolutely think it is true. I really do, because I see it every day. There's always some money being funneled down to a child, down to the grandchild, or up to the, the parents.
If you're 70 and your parents are still alive, you're very lucky.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But, I mean, it is true you're paying some portion of some expense for some reason.
And I don't think that was the case 20 years ago, near as much. Do you?
I wasn't in that age group where I was really thinking, you know. But once you're there, you start to see it. I mean, in your 30s, you don't see it because you still have you're the one that's getting the down, right? Where the pairs are, you know, putting it down. So I don't think you see it, but I think you see it now much more because there's so many baby boomers that want to take care of their kids. They wanted to have better lives than they had. So I believe it's very true. I see it and I understand it. You can't blame people for wanting to help their kids or grandkids have a better life. It's just, boy, it's tough because you're seeing so many other things happen with it. It's like we're getting into the perfect storm. The gas prices, you know, the food price.
Well, my aunts and uncles used to make, pick a stupid number, they'd make $100 a week. They lived, you didn't live as well then as you do now. They lived comfortably, went to the racetrack, bought a car. They lived on $80 a week, and they saved 20. How many people have you come across in the last 5 years that saved 20% of their take-home pay?
I don't know of any.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just not happening. It's just not happening. I will say this. A lot of the people are taking the money out pre-tax for health now and for their retirement.
Right.
Their 401k.
Well, let's save it.
Guess they are saving. Yeah. So I guess I would have to say they are saving. But unfortunately, they're getting hit in expenses. I mean, on health insurance-wise, I mean, I see people paying $800 a month towards their health insurance.
At their work, you mean?
Yeah. It's a big number. And that's, I mean, it's pre-tax dollars. But so when you're saying, did they save 20%? Well, I guess they really did. Unfortunately, it's being spent on the other end.
Well, it's one of the biggest, well, I'll be nice and say bleep-ups, in my opinion, in this country, is this whole idea is that your health care, your health insurance, is deductible to somebody else, but not to you. I mean, the reason why PTI Securities is in the health insurance business is because it's deductible for us and not our employees. I mean, that's asinine and has been from day one. So I'm curious as to why a company, I mean, this is a little off topic with you, but I can roll off topic with you because you can roll with me. Why would a company, or why would a person, ask you to pay $500 towards your health care? And we did this too, by the way. But instead of saying, Nance, how about I cut your salary $300 and I'll just pay it because it's deductible to me and not to you. I mean, what is it? But what we ended up doing when we had a bunch of people here is the plans got more and more expensive. We always paid the full healthcare piece, which had, you know, it had a basic workman's comp, not a workman's comp, disability. It had a basic dental, it had a basic something. And if you wanted to upgrade to the plan where it covered your eyeglasses and all the other stuff, you could pay for that. But just in general, If it's $3,000 a month, which some of them I think are probably up to, or $2,500, why would I ever ask you to pay $500 when I could just say, Nance, let's be intelligent here. Why don't I cut your pay by $300, and that way you get to the same spot because it's deductible 30%, right? Why would I ever ask you to pay $5? To me, that makes no sense, does it?
Well, it's the fact of the matter is whether we think whatever we think is irrelevant because
it's being done. The guys in the building here,
it's an acceptable practice now.
Well, the guys in the building here, they split it with their workers.
Well, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Even if you paid for all of it, okay, it doesn't matter because people are getting stuck with, you know, $5,000 out of pockets,
right.
$7,000 out of pockets. You know, I was helping someone clean out their stuff, and she delivered a baby in 1969, and the bill was $125.
Yep.
I mean, we're way up by past that.
I got a bill here from one of the listeners that he sent me years ago. He's 1953. His mom was 7 days having him in a little company in Mary, right where I used to live. And guess what the bill was. 7 days.
Well, probably $52.
No, the bill was like $40 a day to stay, and whatever didn't include the doctor, but it was $300. Which included the birthing room. I won't call it an operating room. Is there a birthing? What do they call them? I don't know. Something, a birthing room.
I don't think they called them birthing rooms back then. I think you just went into the surgical room suite and had it.
Would it be a delivery room?
Yeah, wherever you delivered the baby, wherever you were hanging, it was a delivery. That's the room I'm talking about. There was a couple of drugs in there, but whatever. It came to like $260 for 7 days or 6 days.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea of people being able to save up a lot of wealth from their income is hard. The wealth bubble is your house or assets or a Honus Wagner rookie card or something you happen to have, or stocks, right? And it's great if you own them, but it's not all that healthy for a general population, I don't think. Just saying.
People are just doing the best they can do, and either they come to me and I help them, or I give them choices, and then they have to pick the best one that works for
what's
them.
What's the rate on a refinance, and give us a shameless plug on your number.
But I just don't have any one number I can give out, because it depends on everything that the person has and does. Once your credit score is below 600, it's tough. They're never going to get it maybe even can't be done. But if you're 620, 640, that number is going to be much different than, someone who's in the 800s.
What does we got a dash here now. If you have a credit score of 620, what does that mean? Does that mean you just have too much debt, or you never pay, or what does that mean?
It could be anything. It could be that like Best Buy is notorious for, how you have that where you don't pay for, or you have to pay it off in a year. You don't have to make any payments. It's interest free for a year. Well, somehow they record two. Let's say you buy $1,000 TV. Let's just say that's the number. They record twice on your two Best Buy credit cards, because Best Buy actually sells it off to somebody else. Okay, so then you have two credit cards. Your maximum is $1,000. Your credit card max is $1,000, and you spend $1,000. That hurts people. That hurts their credit score, because they have utilized 100% of their limit.
So you'd be way better off putting that on your $15,000 credit card.
Correct. But that hurts their score, because they got this interest-free thing, and then in a year they pay it off, right? So the gimmicks people get into have unintended consequences that they don't even know about. I don't even know if Best Buy realizes what they're doing, but they're hurting the person's credit score, because 100% utilization on a credit card is not good. Doesn't mean they can't pay it. Doesn't mean they were late. It just means that they felt you used way too much of your credit, and they're digging you for it.
Hey.
Just unintended consequence of making a purchase that has 12 months free financing.
Well, Nance, thank you very much. It's been a while with the too many Mondays off. Plus, I haven't seen you in a while. I'm just saying. SP Futures up 38, NASDAQ Futures up 220.
I haven't seen John in a while.
No, we had when have you ever seen John? He's a recluse.
I don't know.
I stuck it up the whole day today, Jeff.
Yeah. How are we going to find a way where you guys actually meet John?
Yeah, we got to do this.
We do. So when you guys got to figure it out.
Well, we'll figure it out.
If John's a recluse, I guess we got to go to him. But where?
I don't know. He won't tell anybody where he lives.
Well, he can come to my house.
I've dropped him off a few times, but he won't tell me the house. Just this block. That's the kind of guy he is.
Undisclosed location.
Yeah, this is your general location, as Matt says. S&P Futures up 38. S&P Futures up 221. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
I hate goodbyes.